Hello, everyone. G'day, and welcome to the podcast, Digitally Downloaded podcast, Digitally Uploaded. I'm Matt Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net, and we have a big crew with us this week because we've got lots of fun stuff to talk about. So with us this week is Alan. G'day, Alan.
Hello. I'm alive again. Despite my mic problems, I am not dead. I'm not a skeleton. I'm just a skeleton in costume because I'm spooky. It's spooky times. It's a spooky month.
Good old Halloween. Everyone's in costume. We've also got Trent. Hello, Trent.
Hello. I come as myself because that's the most scariest part. Yeah.
And we've also got Ginny. Hello, Ginny.
Hi. For once, I'm not in a different time zone. I'm actually in Australia. So I get to
that's
be...
That's the scariest thing of all.
That's my costume. I'm Australian.
Yes. And now that you're in Australia, you get to enjoy the woes of the internet and having disconnections and the podcast
oh,
ruined
no.
because you're actually in this country now. It's all the internet's fault. Yeah. Terrible internet. Okay. So, yeah, we got heaps to talk about this week. It should be a fun one, but we thought we'd kick things off with our usual Vocaloid track. This week, it would be Rin, Kagami Rin, and The Lost Ones Week. So for the first section of the podcast this week, we thought we'd talk about licenses and the way that game developers use licenses. There's a reason for that.
this week I have been working through the Lord of the Rings, Middle Earth, Shadow of War, whatever it's called, game by Warner Brothers. I've already blocked a lot of it out of my memory because it's that terrible. I really did not enjoy this game. And
Can't wait to sleep with a spider.
Yeah. One of the main reasons, or probably the main reason actually, that I did not like this game at all was because of the way it used the license, or the way that it kind of butchered Tolkien's vision. And if you're going to take a game and do... take a film, whatever, and do an adaptation of it, then as far as I'm concerned, you should probably do the license justice as best as possible. And they didn't with this one, amongst other things.
I'm shocked.
amongst other things, they took kind of, you know, Shelob, which is a very particular character from The Lord of the Rings, and turned it... her into a sexy spider for reasons I'm still not 100% sure of, but it certainly wasn't in keeping with the character from the book.
And... for the Australian market.
It was clearly for content, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they did. Then you get up to the Balrog, and they have like this great, you know, kaiju battle between a Balrog and a forest spirit thing, and it's just, it's all nonsense. The game is. It takes great liberties with Tolkien's vision and does it without any good reason, really.
Yeah, again, this is a game that includes loot boxes in a single-player game, so, like, I'm shocked the source material at all. I'm personally just shattered, to be quite honest. I expected so much of Warner Brothers, the company that's known for being really good about doing things. I'm still upset about Arkham Knight.
Those Batman games, like them or leave them, and a lot of the times I left them, but they at least did try to be Batman, or at least do
the Simon City character. Were really, really good. It's just that Knight was a colossal train wreck, and I don't know why they did this to us. It's just not good, and I think as well, there's a bit of a thing with like making an original game and then making it into a sequel. I feel like there's a lot of stuff lost in that. And I didn't mind Shadow of Mordor. Like, that was an all right game. It wasn't particularly Lord of the Rings, but I could get over that because there wasn't a sexy spider. Like,
Shadow of Mordor wasn't a great Lord of the Rings story, but at least it wasn't kind of trashing over Lord of the Rings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some of her missions were pretty atrocious, though. I remember the one which basically made me stop playing the game was you had to collect alcohol or something. I don't know, but all the pacing of the mission was completely wrong. The whole point of the mission was just pointless. It was it just put me off the game completely.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of open world nonsense that happened in that game, but it was okay. Like Alan said, I agree with him. It was okay. It was fun. It was a good way to bust a weekend. But this one, in addition to having the open world nonsense, the weak pacing as a result of that, and you throw in the really poor treatment of the license, which is just aggravating, especially for people who are fans of Lord of the Rings, and you would assume that was meant to be the target market of the game. It just seems so counterintuitive to what would make a good game. So I don't understand where any of that comes from. It's not like the only game that does it, and we'll talk about some other examples of licenses, but yeah, it's one that's really, really pissed me off this week, I must admit.
The weirdest thing about it is that it's not tied to any movie, yet it still has no plot. And I feel like that's really strange, because a lot of these standalone license games generally do tend to have something going for them. Like, at least a little bit, like, to bring up a very dated reference, but the Chronicles of Riddick game on PS2.
Oh my god, don't even.
Surprisingly good.
Yeah.
It had a lot going on in it, and I don't understand, like, if you can have a license like Lord of the Rings that is just so completely loved by a lot of people, especially in the last 20 years, you'd think that they'd, you know, not take as many liberties with that and do something that's within the source material rather than just, like, we're going to add spider breasts because it's a game. And then we'll make loot boxes, and the loot boxes will have more spider breasts in them. That'll solve all the issues, and the kids will be buying breasts for days.
Yeah, I mean, people like to rag on EA a lot, especially given some of the stuff that's happened with the way EA's treated the Star Wars license recently, that's another tragic story in itself. But specifically referencing Lord of the Rings, EA did a really good job with Lord of the Rings, funnily enough, when it had
the Two Towers on PS2 was awesome.
Yep, and they did the two strategy games.
Conquest?
What were they called? Lord of the Rings, War of the North, I think the second one was.
That was the beat-em-up. That was the successor to, like, Return of the King, I think. You played as, like, Elf Woman.
Oh, Battles of Middle-Earth. There we go. That's what the two...
Battles of Middle-Earth, yeah.
And those were genuinely good games that did a really good... they really did do the license justice. And I even liked Third Age, which was kind of a Final Fantasy X-style RPG that was set in the Lord of the Rings world. But again, it did a fairly good job of actually representing what Lord of the Rings was about. So I kind of miss that EA lost the license to Warner Brothers for Lord of the Rings, because Warner Brothers has yet to do a good Lord of the Rings game that's actually Lord of the Rings. In addition to these two open world ones, they did that...
MOBA.
They did the MOBA.
The what?
Pretty terrible.
No, seriously?
They made a MOBA.
Yeah, Guardians of Middle-Earth.
It sucked, by the way. Like,
oh, for fuck's sake.
Not good.
And they also did like this action RPG. I can't remember what it's called now, but it had like turret sections in it, first-person shooter style turret sections in it. Just because...
War of the North.
Was it War of the North?
I'm pretty sure that was the three-player one where you had like Elf Lady, Dwarf.
What about the Lord of the Rings Online? Who did that?
That was Warner Brothers. Yes.
No wonder I hated it.
That was one of their first ones, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first one. And
They did that one really early.
They actually bought itself out, I believe, and is now independent of Warner Brothers. But yeah.
Good on them.
Anyway, yeah, the Warner Brothers has not done that license justice. and speaking of other kind of companies that have failed to do the license justice, I know Ginny and I were talking about kind of classic tabletop games as well earlier in the week, and Warhammer is a good example of one that's had up and down fortunes in video games. Not originally, but a couple of years ago, Warhammer was exclusively owned, the license was exclusively owned by THQ, and THQ absolutely trounced it and failed to do anything good with it.
Oh, that's a bit harsh. Dawn of War is like
I'm saying it as it is, Alan. Since THQ went down, Games Workshop, who owns Warhammer, has let basically anybody who wants the license use it, and that's produced some pretty patchy stuff. But it has produced some really good games as well, like that we wouldn't have seen under a single publisher,
like Left 4 Dead with rats.
Yeah, Vermintide is actually really good. I like it.
Vermintide
is a pretty good one. That's by Fat Shark, who do a couple of other kind of chivalry-style mass combat games. I really like Warhammer Quest, which was by Rodeo Games, which was originally on mobile, but it's also on PS4 and stuff and PC now. That's a really good take on the tabletop game. Cyanide had the rights to do Blood Bowl, and they did a pretty good job with that, I felt.
Yeah. Blood Bowl's really, really good, but I just don't understand it, and probably never understand it, so it's kind of live in that little world of seems all right, but I'm not going to touch it with the ball.
I still think the Warhammer kind of glory days were way back before THQ even had the license, and it was MicroProse was doing kind of actual strategy games. Shadows of the Horned Rat and Dark Omen, those were kind of the glory days of Warhammer for me in video games, but things are pretty good with that franchise.
Fire Warrior, everyone's favorite video game. I'm so glad that I rented that from Blockbuster in 2004.
What a throwback. Oh my god.
The worst game I think I've ever played. But like, just in a disappointing way, not in like this game's actually bad, but like, just upset the entire time. Like, the voice acting is some of the worst stuff I've ever heard. I don't know if you guys remember as well.
I just wanted to mention, since we're talking about tabletop games, is Dungeons & Dragons. That's another, obviously, classic.
Oh, yeah. Neverwinter Nights.
Over Vistara.
And yeah, that's one that's been absolutely brutalized in recent years because Atari had the license for that for a long time, and that was a mistake giving them the license. They ruined basically everything good about Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know where things are at with D&D now. Well, I don't
think Neverwinter is an MMO now, isn't it?
It's an MMO. Yeah, I actually played it for a regrettably long time. So
yeah, and that one's fairly good. I think that's the last one that Atari made under its license. I think Atari still has the license for that game, but I don't think they have the license for Dungeons and Dragons anymore, and I don't think anybody does. So yeah, I think that whole franchise is kind of in limbo, which is odd because it's obviously the number one tabletop game. It's weird that they're not kind of churning them out.
It's ridiculous.
Baldur's Gate days. Yeah.
Actually, I prefer GURPS. Thank you very much.
Narrative
you have to be the contrarian.
Well, that's better. Have to be different. Well, that's the best. It uses GURPS, basically. It's the best.
No.
Yep. I'm here to just ruin everything.
Yeah. And
you just
hear me like a steady stream of me going, no, no.
But it's a lot of franchises in limbo now, Bo, and a lot of them, when we were just talking about EA, a lot of them were from EA, like the James Bond license, which ended up going to Activision, that's now in limbo, like Activision's dropped that. Their games weren't that great in their licenses. Like, I remember the EA James Bonds, they were actually decent. EA also had things
except
like...
Except for GoldenEye.
I actually like GoldenEye.
The new one? The new one was alright.
No, Rogue Agent. I remember the old one out, which says I like Rogue Agent. If you just forgot for a minute that it was GoldenEye, it was a decent game.
But they also had it was a game where like they gave James Bond a golden eye, and that was kind of the
excuse. Eye.
Like he actually literal interpretation. Eye. That was how they called it, GoldenEye. It was ridiculous. But
you know what? It isn't though. It's not the blue eye, and this is a Route 1 from Pokemon Blue.
Oh my god.
Seamless transition.
Wow.
Amazing segue into the music. We've been asked by a couple of listeners to just kind of mention which songs we're actually playing on the podcast before we play them,
and I'm here to make it as jarring as possible.
that was a very special effort by Alan to segue into the music.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
No, it was good fun. Okay, so second section of the podcast this week, we're going to talk about rediscovering kind of classic games or games that I guess we didn't really play back in the day, but you know, thanks to the miracles of putting everything on PS4 or PC through via GOG, people are getting a chance to play them again now. And I know this is one that Alan wanted to talk about a bit because he's been playing through one that I don't think he played originally or forgot
about. It terrified me. It was a nightmare game. It was the spookiest thing I'd ever seen. And then rewatching it now is like I was the lamest child in the world. So I recently purchased Dark Cloud 1 on PS4 because I saw the opening cutscene like scrolling through the PS store and was just taken back to the 2001 demo disc that I got with my PS2. And it had a very short demo of Dark Cloud with the first dungeon. And I remember watching this intro cutscene and almost every time, like, freaking out. Like, just a little bit, but enough that was visible that I was not comfortable. I was a massive baby child. And, yeah, it's a really interesting game. It's very easy to see that it was the beginning of the level 5 RPG, though. It's a bit clunky. It's a bit broken. It's very PS2, like, launch title era-ish. I don't know if I can really explain it, but it's nostalgic in a way that I wasn't expecting it to be, because there is so much charm and just weird stuff in there that doesn't make any sense. But it's also incredibly ambitious and doesn't work a lot of the time. Yeah, like, I got it for, I think, $7 on the store, so I can't really complain. And I've put in about, you know, 10 hours into it and enjoyed it and not had a bad time, so that's a good sign, I guess. But yeah, so that sort of led me to be like, what other games have you played that you didn't think that you'd ever play again?
I've been playing through one that just released on PS4, called, where is it? Here we go. Realms of Arcania, Blade of Destiny. So
that sounds like a very 2000s game.
It's very much a 2000s game. So a company called UIG has been bringing quite a few kind of old games to the PlayStation 4. They also brought Transport Tycoon and a couple of other similar games from that era. And this is an RPG. And yeah, it's a very big kind of game with the poor journal system and quest system that old games of the genre had. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember or have been playing kind of older games, but if you go back and you try to actually figure out where you need to go to complete a quest, it's a modern convenience to actually have kind of markers on the map telling you where you kind of need to go. And yeah, it feels odd playing a game that doesn't have that anymore. And yeah, it's always interesting to go back to play games. I never played this one when it was new, so this is kind of, you know, a new game for me. It's always interesting to go back to games from that era and just, you know, see how far they've come in the years since, because we look at kind of modern games that are perhaps not as good, such as Elex, which just released this week.
Bad video game.
It's pretty B grade and stuff. But even, you know, that game is, in terms of the playability and the structure of it and just the ability to kind of move through the game is just so much easier to do than the games of yesteryear. Where you really had to struggle just to find your way around and work out where you need to go next and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it's always good fun to go back to one of these old games, especially if it's an old game that you haven't played before, just to see how you kind of get along with it now. And yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of those sort of games, it's a very, like, it can either go horrendously bad or just, like, pleasantly all right. It's neither, like, amazing, it always is one of those two things. And so I never played the Resident Evil, like, PS1 version until I had a Vita. I'd always played the remake, and I was like, oh, the remake's so good. I bet that Resident Evil 1 is going to be just as good. Like, it's such a cool game. No, the game does not hold up. And playing the remake and playing HD remake, which came out on PS4 as well, because I am a very easy to please person when it comes to rebuying games, apparently. Like, it kind of ruined the game for me. So it's a bit upsetting that I can't go back to the PS1 era as easily, because there's a lot of stuff that I miss, because either A, I was not born, or B, it's, like, still terrifying to me, like Abe's Odyssey.
Yeah, I mean,
Abe's Odyssey ever again.
To kind of be brutally honest and probably very controversial about this, there are very few PlayStation 1 games that are still, you know, playable by modern standards. Very, very few, especially 3D ones. The 2D ones like Symphony of Night and whatever are still pretty...
No, I was literally about to say that, yeah. Like, Symphony of Night is incredible still.
And the kind of the 3D turn-based ones which aren't to control or kind of... mechanics heavy, like the Final Fantasy and whatever, they're still okay. But yeah, some of the more action orientated PlayStation 1 games are pretty much unplayable. Have you actually tried to play the Medal of Honor that was on the PlayStation?
It has like a frame rate of 1.
Yeah.
Sorry, what?
It's pretty dismal.
Think of the worst possible controlling thing you can imagine, then give it a slideshow, and then have you just like hit the right mouse button to, well, not mouse button obviously, but like hit the right whatever to do nothing and be upset.
So it's a primitive walking simulator, is it?
Basically, yeah, unfortunately. Probably one of the worst things you could possibly go for in a PS2, a PS1 game, rather.
Yeah. And it goes for the same for the Nintendo 64 and Dreamcast. You know, a lot of these games...
Oh, but Dreamcast is bad for different reasons, like the voice acting. I don't know if you guys ever played... it was a beat-em-up, but it was meant to be a spiritual... Blah, 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 blah. Can't speak anymore. It was meant to be a spiritual sequel to Streets of Rage, and I forget what it was called, but it was like... The main character was called, like, Stick Breitling or something, and it's just one of the worst things I've ever heard. The way that they pronounce the words is just so not human. And this is not like a language barrier thing. This is just like, don't come. He is a zombie. Like that sort of thing.
No!
Not good for that.
I mean, we kind of all remember the classics from all of those consoles. Like Mario 64 is obviously a classic. Or
Soul Calibur anymore.
Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast is obviously a classic. But yeah. Beneath those classics, the vast majority of the games, and the vast majority of the games are not particularly playable by today's standards. Like,
Did you play Baldur's Gate at all? Just out of interest, like when you were Baldur's Gate 1 or 2, did you ever play any of those?
You're talking about the PC ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have them on my iPad still.
So I never played them, and I tried to play it on my iPad. Tried to play the second one rather because everyone was going, "Oh yeah, it's one of the best games of all time. It's so incredible. It's so amazing. It's so in depth." And I was like, "Okay, I'll give it a shot." I still have not left the first room because I just got bogged down in stats and was like, "I don't know what's going on. I don't know what I'm picking."
That's why I always kind of say, you know, it's good to go back to some of these games that you didn't play when they were new, because. I mean, I can go back and I can play Baldur's Gate 2 any time and kind of get along with it, because I remember playing it, you know, when it was new, and it's kind of there's some nostalgia there, and I'm familiar enough with it to get along with it. But you know, for somebody like yourself, Alan, who hasn't played the original Baldur's Gate 2 or hadn't played the original Baldur's Gate 2, that's a lot of stuff that kind of old way of doing games that you need to get across. Yeah. And
it's that very clunky PC thing.
It's absolutely difficult. Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely difficult. And yeah, I can certainly appreciate, as good as Baldur's Gate 2 is now, how somebody who hadn't played it before would have trouble going back to it.
Mm. I mean, like, on that topic as well, just moving a bit of sideways, I don't know if you guys ever played Rez on release.
No.
But I had a demo of that as well, and that game confused me so much and made me so just like, What am I doing? Like genuine confusion. Like imagine 6-year-old little Alan just being like, "What? What is this meant to be?" I went back and played it with Infinite recently for the very first time since that demo disc in like 2001, and I love it. Like it's so different to see like how original sort of, you know, 5-10 minute, you know, interactions with games can be so different when you're just, you know, older and you know what you're doing now, and you're like, you got your stuff together. It's great. I like it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, particularly for me, I don't know if you guys have played these, you probably have, but do you remember Avalon, the text-based RPG?
I've heard of it, never played it.
Seriously? Well, yeah. So I found it when I was a child. I wasn't 6 years old, but I was still pretty young. And I had, like, sort of come off, like, I had come fresh from Neopets. And I was like looking for something that was a bit of a challenge.
Wow. So you went to Club Penguin first.
Yeah. And then I did a bad word at Club Penguin and they banned me. So I had to go somewhere else. So I was like, okay, you know, I just looked up RPGs and I was like, okay, what's a good RPG? And it was like, Avalon, a magical world where you can do anything you want. And as someone who was like clearly a badass after just being banned from Club Penguin, I was like, sweet, this is like the place for me.
Yep.
So I launched up Avalon and I loaded it into the game. Like I navigated through like the whole like making your character and kind of walking around, but then like an hour in I got like stuck in a swamp and just didn't know how to leave. Like, because it's all text-based, right? So it's like walk left and it's like you see a stone and a tree. What do you do now? And then it was like there was like no guidance, and so I'm just walking in circles for like a full hour and I couldn't leave the damn swamp. and people just walking past me and laughing at me like, oh, what an idiot. Like, there was like an NPC, and there was like a wizard NPC who was like, you're still lost, my son. And I'm like, thanks, dude. Like, cool. And then like, I just could never play it. And then so I was like, you know what? RPGs suck. I'm going back to Neopets. And then like, I think 2 weeks ago, I was like, oh, Avalon. I wonder if that's still hanging around. So I went to check it out, and like, I still can't get past the swamp. So time has taught me that I'm still navigationally challenged. And while I thought that revisiting the game as an adult with like maybe a bit more life experience would help me out, I am still completely lost in Avalon. So that's my classic game story.
Sounds like a bit of a kerfuffle. You can say it's a bit of a carnival kerfuffle, and that's what we're going to be playing next from the Cuphead soundtrack.
Incredible segues into music. They're good, but more particularly, that was Cuphead, and that was good music, good game, good music, good life. All right. So for the last section of the podcast this week, we're going to be talking about Halloween, since this is the last podcast we're recording before the date. So, or the last podcast that'll be out anyway before the date. So, yeah, obviously there's a lot of spooky stuff happening. Lots of horror games get released at this time of year, and then lots of kind of themed stuff happens at this time of year as well. Like Final Fantasy 14 has a Halloween themed thingy going on. Pokemon Go has a Halloween themed thingy going on. I don't really follow that game anymore, but Trent will tell us all about that. So, Trent, yes. You obviously are keen about that, but is there anything else kind of Halloween-ish that you're kind of in the mood for or you're looking forward to this year?
Well, Life is Strange had like a creepy thing when like there's like a whole theme in the prequel where basically Chloe sees like her father in like dreamlike sequences. Anyway, in the latest one, she's like having like a marshmallow fire pit, and then like he turns to her and is like, "Well, don't get burnt in the fire," and has like half his face on fire. Yeah, what? That was pretty scary.
With the family.
Not necessarily Halloween related, but it came out this week. You know, it's a Halloween-ish time. It's, yeah. But going back towards Pokemon, the whole idea of that is basically the events gives you more loot boxes which have stuff in them. But no, you get to see what's in the loot boxes. So you get so you get, you know, your eggs, you get raid passes this time, you've got, you know, the incense, and you know, you've got, you know, potions, I think were the other ones. No, berries. More berries. So it's actually a decent loot box compared to the last one. And there's ghost Pokemon now and up to Generation 3, which, yeah, so that's a big thing for Pokemon Go, Generation 3 coming out, even though everyone's been playing Generation 3 since, what, 2005 it came out?
I'm still shocked and horrified that people still play Pokemon Go. That's a whole thing all to itself. That's amazing. It's
all because of the raids in it, so now you get, like, Pokemon raids at the gym, so there's everyone raids goes. In it? So everyone gets in big giant groups, and then like there's Facebook pages and stuff. It's like a whole sub community you don't want to hear about. Anyway, so they all get into giant groups. They go to these locations. They play Pokemon Go and they battle for a Pokemon at the gym in public locations in giant groups. And awkward people like point their fingers up at them and say, "Get lost, nerds." And yes, they're pretty much undesirables, and you don't really want to go near them. But
to be real for a second, I will pay money to see a fight.
Yeah, I would love to see that. It's like people cheering each other on in a group. Like, yeah,
nudging it off, like, "Man, don't slap me," like that sort of thing. I want that.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go still exists. Ladies and gentlemen.
And people are in the spirit of Halloween with it. Good to know. Ginny, what about you? Is there anything you're kind of looking forward to playing this Halloween? Is there any games that have kind of come out that catch your eye?
Well, for me, definitely it's the Final Fantasy 14 Halloween event, because I've given so much of my life to that game, I now cannot stop. It's really cool. I love all the FF14 seasonal events. You can always dress up your character, get cool outfits, and do spooky things. This isn't really a new game, but I think it's quite Halloween-y. I know that we covered the game when it came out. Yomawari?
Yes.
So I'm playing Night Out for the first time. I've just picked it up recently.
Is it ruining you?
It's scary.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying.
It's freaking scary. Like, I saw the trailer and I was like, you know, I'm a bit of a wuss. I can handle this. You know, it looks cute. I run around town for a bit. There's a couple of light, you know, it's pretty well lit still. I think I'll be fine. And like an hour into it, I'm ruined. Like, honestly, it's so creepy. Like, as an adult, like, I'm not scared of the dark. Like, you know, I used to be a really, really tiny wussy child. And I just feel like the game taps into that really well. Like the fears that you would have as a small Asian child, which I was, coincidentally enough. So it's probably like awakening some weird traumatic childhood memory in me. But seriously, like, it's just, I didn't think that it would be that scary. And I'm actually quite loving it. I really
yeah,
am.
Yeah, I mean,
it looks so cutesy that it would absolutely throw me off guard, I think.
That did throw me off guard. It's like, yeah,
the Japanese developers with kind of no budget and working in kind of RPG and banker style engines, they've become really good at doing this. Corpse Party is another good example of it. It's like, you look at it, you look at the graphics and you go, yeah, this can't possibly scare me. And then you sit down to start playing and within like 5 minutes, you're kind of shaking and stuff. And yeah, it's amazing. Like, I'm assuming you're through the kind of introductory section of Yomiwari Jinni, so I'm not spoiling anything if I talk about that.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So, spoiler alert, but this is a very old game now, so deal with it.
Yeah, I feel like if you're having to give a spoiler alert on the game from 2014, you're probably like, you passed it, you're done.
Anyway, the original Yomiwari starts off and you're giving your little doggy a walk, and you know, you're just walking along, and it's all kind of normal. It's this nice kind of warm summer evening, and you're feeling pretty good. And then out of absolutely nowhere, a car comes along and just, you know, destroys your dog. And then you walk home with just the lead. And it's just so incredibly shocking because it comes out of absolutely nowhere. You don't expect it. It just hits you like a truck. And
podcast over. We're calling it there.
And then, yeah, it's just really affecting to see this little girl walking home with, you know, just the collar of her dog. And, yeah, that kind of sets the tone for the game. And then the horror stuff starts and it just keeps finding new ways to shock you more and more. So, the new one, which I'm playing through at the moment, and I'll have a review up by the time you listen to this podcast, I think. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it starts off in an even more shocking fashion. And it just escalates.
You get run over by a car.
Now you're the ghost.
Now you are the car.
And it just escalates even further. And this one's quite interesting. It's got two characters this time, and they're trying to find each other. So they get separated. They're kind of sisterly type figures. They're not sisters. They're just friends, but they're that kind of close. And yeah, they go to a fireworks festival in the night. And they get lost on the way home and separated, and then they try to find each other. So that's kind of the theme for the game. But yeah, it's basically everything that Yomiwari was, but even more shocking and quite intense. And yeah,
Jesus, yeah,
those games are just incredible. I love them, and I think they're amazing. I think they're perfect for Halloween, and you'll start to play them because you think they're cute or whatever, or because you think you can't possibly be scared by them. And good luck. You will be
don't
scared.
Make the mistake that I did, but definitely play the game. Like, don't expect nothing.
Don't
from
make
it.
The same
like,
mistake I did play. By playing the game, but also play the game.
Be realistic about your expectations for fear.
Play the game, but play it during the day. Don't be stupid and play it at night because you're tough enough for it, because you're not tough enough for it. Nobody is. Alan.
Yes.
What about you? What is your
Halloween
game?
Yes.
And don't say Evil Within 2.
I kind of want to say Evil Within 2, but I won't. I've been replaying Lisa, the series as a whole. Lisa's like a RPG Maker inspired. So I don't know if you guys have heard of Yume Nikki. The game's really, really cool. Inspired a lot of really interesting sort of horror-themed games. But Lisa basically took that and went more overt with its themes. So it's very, very dark. And the first one's more like a sort of puzzle exploration-y game. It's called Lisa the First. You can get it for free, I'm pretty sure. And then the second one is a more traditional sort of RPG, but it causes me to have major stress problems whenever I start playing it, and it's horrendous. It's not overt horror, but it's just... Like, when you boot up the game, like, there's just a hanging body, like, on a noose, like, in the corner of the screen, and it's like, oh, that's nice. And it's Lisa, that's Lisa as well, I think. I'm pretty sure it's meant to be Lisa. And the theme from the first game plays, and you're just like, oh, this is not pleasant at all. And she just sort of is in the background at some points during the game, and it's very frightening. But that's not the reason it's so stressful. So the game has this really interesting mechanic of making you make awful, awful decisions. It'll make you pick between losing an arm on your main character, which means you lose like half your combat abilities, or losing all of your items, or losing your arm and losing a party member. and then like they will not come back, like they will die. And it's just, it's very stressful. It's a great game. It's definitely not for everyone. The themes in it are horrendous. They're very, very like just like a big old not a good time if you're having a bad day. if you're after something that does RPG mixed with narrative in a way that you're probably not used to, then I would absolutely recommend giving it a shot just because it is so unique. And I don't want to use this, but I saw a review that said it's basically Undertale meets David Lynch, even though it's more like Undertale is the Lisa without David Lynch because it came before Undertale. But it's just very like strange and bizarre and confronting on a very regular basis, and I love that. But also, I cannot play it for more than an hour. I am stressing over it, thinking about it now.
So yeah, just looking at the screenshots and stuff, it does look like it's Corpse, kind of Corpse Party-ish, in its, at least its visual vibe.
Very surreal.
Best way I guess because they've kind of been both been built in kind of RPG Maker style engines, but I like those kinds of games. I like horror games that don't rely on just, you know, kind of the most, you know, ugly monsters that you can possibly find, kind of with
it scares you through mechanics. And,
I like when a horror game is well written, and it's kind of the words and the narrative that kind of shocks me. I prefer my horror games without too much action in them. Story for me, and the idea of survival, and the idea of horror itself is that you're kind of disempowered. And when you play something like Evil Within, for example, and you have lots of guns and things, it kind of, it's more about empowerment, which doesn't really strike me kind of horror, you know, kind of experience. They're more kind of
but there's a man with a safe on his head, though.
Or something. horror themed shooters or something. Yeah, it's the old kind of Silent Hill versus Resident Evil kind of debate, which one do you prefer? I'm much more Silent Hill.
I like
as
both.
Unplayable as those are now, unfortunately.
I can't wait to play the Silent Hill HD collection when it's released on PS4.
I'm a crazy person which only likes Shattered Memories.
oh dear.
It's such a good game, though.
It's a pretty interesting game, but it's not what I wanted. But you know what I did want, though? This is a soundtrack to Blue Reflection. It's the main theme to Blue Reflection, called Blue Reflection. What a shock. And here we go.
Oh my god.
I'm going to add snaps. Bada bing, bada boom.
Legend.